Chapter 7, Running for Australia. "Catherine, we're so proud of you," Mum said. "Have fun over there and make the most of it. You hear?" Mum, Bruce and I were standing at the airport in Brisbane, waiting for my flight to be called. I was so excited. I couldn't wait to get to Auckland in New Zealand to compete in my first Commonwealth Games. At 16, I was the youngest member of the Australian athletics team. Bruce gave me a hug goodbye. "Go over there and sock it to them," he said. Mum waved at me all the way to the airport gate. "Bye, darling," she called out, "and don't forget to ring." When I arrived in Auckland, I was taken straight to the Commonwealth Games Village, my home for the next 2 weeks. The village was brand new, so it was really fresh and clean. My race wasn't on until the end of the games, so I had heaps of spare time on my hands. As the days went by, I found myself sleeping lots and eating too much as well. There was a huge dining room for all the athletes. You could eat as much chocolate cake, muffins, and cheesecake as you liked. I picked out and even took some mini cheesecakes back to my room. I was sharing a unit with Kathy Stambell and Monique Dunstan. At 19, Monique was the closest to me in age and we got on really well. I used to paint her nails for her with my bright red nail polish. Of course, I did have to do a bit of preparation for the relay race as well, but even being at the warm-up track was a thrill. I kept seeing all those Olympic champions. I was in the same team as Debbie Flintoff-King, Robert D. Casella, Steve Montangeli, and Darren Clark. These guys were my idols. I had watched Debbie and Rob win gold medals on TV, so getting to see them up close was great. One day Mike and I ran into the Jamaican sprinter Merlene Otte. Merlene was one of the world's fastest women. By this stage, she'd already won 3 Olympic medals. Mike was so excited to meet her. He told her he thought I was a champion of the future. "Merlene, this is Catherine Freeman," he said. "Remember her name because she's going to be a big star one day." I love seeing all the different nationalities and cultures at the games. Every culture was so different and colourful. Each night, New Zealand and Polynesian dancers would set up outside the dining room and start dancing and swaying to music. I thought the women were beautiful with their long hair, bikini tops, and hula skirts. They also wore tropical flowers on their heads, like crowns. There was always something going on. If it wasn't music and dancing, then it was the Aussie athletes providing the entertainment. The Aussie team, particularly the boys, were pretty cheeky. They had a habit of starting up food fights after dinner. In the mornings, I'd get up and see all this squashed, leftover food on the pathways. I was running in the relay with 3 other girls, my 2 roommates, plus Kerry Johnson. Kerry was Australia's number 1 sprinter at the time, and she'd been really sweet to me. She helped me at training and generally looked out for the baby of the team. One day I overheard some people talking in our unit. I recognised Kerry's voice straight away. "There's no way I'm letting Jane Fleming take Catherine's place," she said. My heart sank. They were thinking of dropping me from the relay team. Jane Fleming was a heptathlete, and she'd already picked up her 2nd gold medal at the games. I was devastated. Kerry stuck up for me. "We've been practicing as a team for weeks. Jane just can't come in the last minute and disrupt everything. If Catherine doesn't run, then I won't run." I didn't hear much after that. But thanks to Kerry, the others backed down and I got to keep my place on the team. When the race day arrived, I was feeling quite calm. The relay is a tricky event. Each runner has to concentrate not only on running fast, but on passing the baton safely to the next girl's hands. We'd done enough practice to feel confident that we could pass the baton on smoothly. "I think we'll win this today," Kerry said as we walked out onto the track. I wished the other girls well, then took off my warm-up clothes and walked to my position. I was running third after Kathy, and I had to pass the baton to Kerry, who was running the final leg of the race. I watched as the gun went off, bang, and the race started. Monique ran the first leg and passed the baton safely to Kathy. Before I knew it, Kathy was only 60 metres away from me. I'd been so focused on watching my teammates, I had no idea what position we were in. All I knew was that Kathy, who's not a small girl, was moving towards me at full pelt like a freight train. When she reached the sticky tape marker on the track, it was my cue to take off. I started running as fast as I could. Kathy yelled out, "Hand," and I shot my left hand out behind me, just like we'd practiced in training. The baton change was perfect. Phew. Once I had a firm grip, I ran as fast as I could towards Kerry. Before I knew it, she was right in front of me. Her hand was outstretched, ready to sprint to the finish with the shiny, hollow baton. Once she had it, she exploded away, and I slowed down just in time to watch her cross the finish line in first place. We'd won. I caught up with Monique and Kathy, and together we ran over to join Kerry. We couldn't stop hugging each other and jumping for joy. By the time they presented us with our medals, the seriousness of the moment had hit me. When they played the national anthem, I sung the words as loud as I could. I was so proud and honoured. Heaps of people came to the press conference afterwards. Apparently someone had realised that I was the first Aborigine to win a Commonwealth Games gold medal for track and field. Journalists kept asking me how I felt. "Being Aboriginal means everything to me," I said. "So many of my friends have the talent, but lack the opportunity. I did this for all of us." Life is a funny thing at times. After my experience at the Commonwealth Games, I thought I'd be on top of the world for a very long time. But it didn't turn out that way. A few days after I'd flown home to Queensland, my parents and I were at a neighbour's house, watching a replay of the closing ceremony on TV. "That's you, Catherine," Mum yelled when she spotted me on the screen. Mum and Bruce were so proud. They hadn't stopped asking me questions. "Who did you meet? What was the village like? What did you eat?" I was still on an absolute high. The day before, I'd been part of the Commonwealth Games celebrations in Brisbane. I was so happy it was like my feet didn't touch the ground. I was just telling Mum about what it was like to do a victory lap when Bruce got a phone call. I didn't pay that much attention. I thought it was probably his work. But as soon as he hung up, I could tell something was wrong. "Anne-Marie's dead," he said. In that moment, all the world's sunshine was taken away. It took a couple of seconds for Mum to realise what she'd heard. Then she fell apart. She cried out in pain and love. She couldn't believe that her oldest daughter was gone. Bruce told us that Anne-Marie had died of an asthma attack. She was only 24. I sat there in shock, feeling like my heart was breaking. How could one moment bring you so much joy and laughter, and the next cause you so much pain? Anne-Marie's funeral was held in Rockhampton. I wanted to have my gold medal buried with her, but Mum talked me out of it. "Ma, I want Anne-Marie to have it," I said. "No, Catherine," she said. "One day you'll want to show that medal to your grandchildren." That's what Anne-Marie would have wanted. We buried the flower posy from my medal ceremony with Anne-Marie instead. As I stood at the grave with my family, I suddenly knew what I had to do. I had to run for Anne-Marie. I promised myself that from that day onwards, every race I ran would be for her.